Thanks for coming in, Mr. Mahoney. Do you have your member ID card?
Yep, I have it right here in the FEP Blue app. See?
Great.
It's awesome. The app can also help me find a provider and keep tabs on my deductibles.
Okay, can I...
Oh, yeah, and my out-of-pocket spending and visit limits, and I can call the nurse line.
I'm really glad it does all that, but I only need to see your member ID card.
Oh, that's it? Why didn't you say so?
Fearless is just one tap away. With the new FEP Blue app from Blue Cross and Blue Shield, you can access your health benefits on the go. Download it now at fepblue.org/app.
You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
How's it going, everybody? Welcome to another episode of Locked On Seahawks, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, the fastest growing sports audio network in the world. This is Vincent Verhey of Football Outsiders, and I'm back talking your Seattle Seahawks and all the news around the NFL. Thanks for hanging out today, and let's hang out again tomorrow. Be sure you and your friends subscribe to the podcast, because we are going to have some fun. We're going to do our crosstalk segment today with Matt Derry of Locked On Lions. Get the Detroit fans' view on the Seahawks-Lions playoff game tomorrow afternoon. See why they are optimistic, and why we are optimistic, and why both fan bases actually aren't that energized. It's kind of a strange turn this conversation took, but... Before we get into that, we're going to do our look at the five Lions Seattle must, the five Lions Seattle must stop. And if you listen to my preview show on Wednesday, this will come as no surprise to you. It's all about the quarterbacks and receivers. There's no one on Detroit's defense that worries me. There's nothing about Detroit's running game that worries me. It's all about Detroit's passing game that worries me as a Seahawks fan. So it all starts with the quarterback, obviously the number one Lion Seattle must stop, Matthew Stafford, the quarterback. He's the first overall pick out of Georgia in 2009. He was injured for parts of his first two seasons, but he has not missed a start since 2011. He has an NFL record 8 fourth quarter comebacks this season, so he's been able to snatch the victory from the jaws of defeat over and over and over again, but that also means he's behind every game. He also led the league with 5 fourth quarter comebacks in 2014. He has twice led the league in pass attempts. He has led the league once in completions. He's kind of like a modern-day Drew Bledsoe in the NFL. Like Drew Bledsoe, he was the first overall pick. Like Drew Bledsoe, he is a good but not great quarterback who often threw just tons of passes on offenses that couldn't run at all. So since 2011, he has not missed a start. And in that time frame, he is second in the NFL in pass attempts behind only Drew Brees. He is third in completions. He is third in yards. He is sixth in touchdowns. He is also fifth in most interceptions. But he is a very prolific passer, and he is the one guy you have to stop when facing Detroit, and really has been now for the past half decade. The number two Lion Seattle must stop, Golden Tate, a name you all know well, a second-round pick out of Notre Dame by Seattle in 2010. In his Seattle tenure, he never caught more than 64 passes in a season, and he signs with Detroit, and his catches jump to 99, 90, and 91 in the past 3 years. Two of those years, by the way, he was the number two receiver behind Calvin Johnson, still catching 90-plus passes. He was 11th in catches this year in the NFL, 15th in yards, though he only scored 4 touchdowns. The number three Lions Seattle must stop, wide receiver Marvin Jones, a fifth-round pick out of Cal in 2012 by Cincinnati. He spent 3 years in Cincinnati. This is his first year in Detroit. You look at his yards each season, and they're going up almost in a straight line. He adds about 100 yards a year. He had 201 yards as a rookie, 712 yards in his second year, 816 yards in his third year, and now 930 yards in his first year in Detroit. And his yards went up. His catches actually went down. But at 16.9 yards per catch, that is fifth in the NFL. So he is Detroit's big play guy. The number four Lion Seattle must stop, Anquan Boldin, veteran wide receiver out of Florida State, drafted by Arizona in the second round in 2003, played many years for the Cardinals, a few years for the Ravens, a few years for the 49ers, so he's very, very familiar to Seattle fans. This is his first year in Detroit since he was drafted in 2003, which was 13 years ago, for those of you who are bad at math, third in the NFL in catches, third in yards, fifth in touchdowns. And he leads the Lions with 8 touchdown catches this year, so he's their biggest red zone threat. The fifth Lion Seattle must stop is the tight end Eric Ebron. the first round pick out of North Carolina in 2014, the 10th overall draft pick this year. Been a disappointment for two seasons, but is enjoying his best year right now. He is 10th among tight ends in catches and 8th in yards, though he has only one touchdown. So there you go. That is the five Lions Seattle must stop. Matt Stafford, quarterback, Golden Tate, wide receiver, Marvin Jones, wide receiver, Anquan Boldin, wide receiver, and Eric Ebron, the tight end. All right, while we got a little break here, let's take a look at what is going on the Locked On Podcast Network today. Over at Locked On NFL, Matt Williamson, the mothership, has his first ever Locked On NFL playoff preview show, so you want to get his thoughts on the Seahawks and Lions. Meanwhile, over at Locked On Fantasy, Vinny Iyer of Sporting News has his final updates and analysis of the week before Saturday's kickoff. And over at Locked On Draft, for the non-playoff teams, we know now the top 20 picks in next year's draft, who's going to be picking where. So Joe Marino and Kyle Krabs will take a look at that top 20 and see what potential themes might unfold. So that is what is going on around the Locked On Podcast Network. Be sure and check that out today. All right, with that bit of business taken care of, let's go ahead and jump into this crosstalk segment. This is my conversation with Matt Derry of Locked On Lions, breaking down everything you need to know for Saturday's playoff game.
All right, here we go. Coming down in 3, 2, and 1. All right, as promised right here on Locked On Lions and also on Locked On Seahawks, a little crossover opportunity for a podcast here with Vincent Verhey of Locked On Seahawks. Matt Derry with you on Locked On Lions. Vincent, big game Saturday night. What's the buzz in Seattle?
It isn't that the big game. You could argue the city and the town here has gotten pretty spoiled with Seattle's success lately, the Seahawks' success in the past 5 years, because this is it's the playoffs. This is it counts. This is the do or die, win or go home. And all anyone wants to talk about is whether Richard Sherman's going to talk to the media or not.
Really? That's still a story?
It's the story. No one is talking about the game at all. I don't know if it's taking for granted that they're going to get a win here or what, but I keep waiting for this to go away and someone to talk about what Seattle's going to do, and so far it's not happening. It's very weird.
You know, it's funny. No one's talking about the game here either. They're all talking about Jim Caldwell getting a fourth year next year. Nobody's talking about the game. It's all Caldwell.
It could be part of the thing, and I was writing about this morning. These are two teams that kind of, they both, to a degree, backed into the playoffs. Detroit, especially, with the three-game losing streak they're on. But Seattle has not been playing great either lately. And lost three of their last six games. Lost at home to Arizona in a game they needed to get a first-round bye. So both teams are coming into the playoff ice cold. That may have something to do with it.
For my audience, Vincent, that doesn't know, so Sherman usually talks once a week. I know he talked to somebody local there, didn't he, one-on-one, but he hasn't talked at a press conference in a while. Is that right?
Yeah, he's always been a guy who will, face music and do his press conference one-on-one. This all started a couple weeks ago when the Rams game, he had a blow-up when the offense threw a pass on first and goal from the one-yard line. And, there's a very famous Seahawks loss that hinged on the goal line pass a few years back. And apparently Sherman lost his mind and started shouting at his coaches to never do that again, which is funny because they've thrown goal line passes since then, and some of them have worked. I'm not sure what it was about this one that set him off. But that started, and then when a local reporter pressed him on the issue at his press conference that week, Sherman sniped to him that he was going to ruin his career and make sure he never got credentialed again, and obviously that never happened. And this week, he has just decided that he said he's going to speak to Ed Werder at ESPN. He did one interview with Q13 Fox, which is the Seahawks local station here, and that was it. And so this is what's on people's mind is who's Richard Sherman talking to and when he's going to talk to them.
Are fans mad at him because he's not talking to the media, or is this more of a media-driven story? I've seen some people say he's kind of a hypocrite.
Probably some. By and large, I think it's all 95% media driven. I mean, this city had Marshawn Lynch in town for years and years and years, and of course, he never talked to the media, and everyone loved him just fine. So I think it's a little bit of the Sherman's changed his tune, and he's kind of blowing things out of proportion. There's certainly room to criticize him in this. It's a little bit about the season as a whole has been pretty disappointing for Seattle. There's a lot of stuff going into it, but by and large, I think it's being blown way out of proportion. And when we look back on the 2016 Seahawks, whatever their eventual fate may be, Richard Sherman speaking to the media or not speaking to the media is not going to be what we're talking about.
It's really interesting. Vince Verhey, of course, of Locked On Seahawks. Matt Derry, Locked On Lions, little crossover podcast. Vince, same type of thing here. I don't know how much, and we'll dive into the game, you and I, but I don't know how many people are really, and I was driving home today listening to 97.1 The Ticket and Valenian Foster, the best show in town here, and some of the discussion has been, the game. But a lot of it is Bob Quinn speaking to SiriusXM last night saying it's tough to make the playoffs. 2 days before that, it's been Jim Caldwell and whether or not he should get a fourth year, and he's going to get a fourth year. So, the game itself, my guess is everybody in Seattle thinks you guys will run away with this, and everybody here thinks, well, Lions haven't won a playoff game, haven't won a playoff game, since 1991, so it's been a long time, so nobody thinks they're going to go to Seattle and win. It's kind of crazy.
I think that's a big part of it, and the way, obviously, both these teams have played, I expect it'll probably, I still think Seattle will win, but I still think it'll come up a lot closer than most people are thinking, just because Seattle has a tendency to win some really ugly football games, and Detroit, of course, all year, their whole stick has been just keep it close until the last drive, and then try to make a play or two.
No, I don't think there's any question that this isn't the same Seahawks team, right, Vince? What's the biggest difference between the Super Bowl winning team? I know Earl Thomas is out, but what's the vibe? What's the biggest difference? Is the defense not as ferocious? What is it from this year as opposed to a couple of years ago when they won it all?
The swing from losing Earl Thomas, I don't think that can be understated. I did a show, week one, I was talking to Locked On Dolphins for the Seattle's opener against Miami. And he asked me what was the most important defender on Seattle's team. And without hesitation, it's Earl Thomas. There's no one who plays a deep center field as much as Earl Thomas, did when he was healthy. Their whole scheme is built around Earl playing a deep center field and having the speed and the range and the quickness to cover not just sideline routes from the middle, but also to come up and make plays in the run game. And since he's been out, there have been breakdowns in the passing game too, and big plays to the sideline, down the sideline for beating cornerbacks. But also, especially against San Francisco this past week, there were tons of communication issues. Guys were left wide open coming out of the backfield, or just coming across the short middle on crossing routes, and they're getting big gains on really easy completions. And they cinched things up, and by the end, they're a much better team than San Francisco, and they got they got the win. But there have definitely been some problems since Earl's gone out. Since he was hurt, in the Seahawks' past six games, he only played one of them, and he played, I think, 17 snaps in the Carolina game. But since he's gone out, the Seahawks have given up almost 8 yards a pass with 8 touchdowns and only 2 interceptions. And this is not a murderer's row of quarterbacks either. They did play Aaron Rodgers, but they're otherwise looking at Colin Kaepernick and Jared Goff and Cam Newton, who's been bad this year, and Jameis Winston. And they've all had really good games by their standards against this defense. So the past 6 weeks of this defense has been a rude awakening. We kind of take it for granted in Seattle that the defense is going to be awesome every week, and lately they really, really haven't. And the other side of the ball, and it's one that should have been seen coming, but Seattle really, really tried, deliberately tried to go into this year without an offensive line. Their total cap hit for all 10 linemen was, at the time, 50% lower than the next lowest team. There were something like a dozen individual offensive linemen who had a bigger cap hit than all 10 of Seattle's guys across the league. And guess what? It didn't work. It's been a disaster quite often. Now, things have kind of settled down. The interior line has been better than the exterior, especially since Jermaine Ifedi, the first-round pick, he missed the first 3 games with a foot injury. And since he's come back, he's had his moments on dramatic swings both ways. But he solidified the inside somewhat. The real issue is a tackle. They went into it with the starting left tackle, Bradley Sowell, who was a backup in Arizona for 2 years, and he played very much like a backup when he was here. And he eventually lost his job to a guy named George Fant, who I don't know how big a story this is nationally. Frankly, it should be a bigger story that this guy is starting in the NFL. He played, I want to say, two games of college football as a tight end and defensive lineman, and he played zero games of high school football. He was a basketball player throughout his career, and when he realized he wasn't going to be in the NBA in his last year of college, he tried switching to football. And here he is, not even a year under his belt as a football player, and he's a starting left tackle in the National Football League in the playoffs. And he hasn't been dominant. He hasn't been great, but more often than not, he has been invisible, which is what you want from your offensive line. So since they've settled in, they've got a starting five now from left to right of George Fant, Mark Lewinsky, who was a draft pick a couple of years ago. Justin Britt is at center. He's a first-round pick from 2014 who failed a tackle and failed a guard, but seems to have found a home at center. Fetty is the first-round pick this year at right guard. And Gary Gilliam, they finally settled on him at right tackle, although he also lost his job in November and December and had to get back into the lineup. But when they've had those five guys in the field, they've generally been pretty okay. When any one of them is missing, things have gone to hell quickly.
It's interesting. We're talking again, Vince Verhey of Locked On Seahawks. Matt Derry with you, Locked On Lions. Vince, it's very interesting because yesterday Terrell Austin, the Lions defensive coordinator, made the point that, look, the Seahawks still try to play the game the same way they did when Marshawn Lynch was there. And the Lions, over the last couple of weeks, really have not been able to stop the run and have struggled against the run. I mean, Aaron Ripkowski from the Packers ripped him to shreds Sunday night. Of course, the week before it was Ezekiel Elliott, who tears up everybody. But the Lions' run defense has not been good the last couple of weeks. Defense really overachieved all year. If you think about two of all three of your high-priced, best defensive players, Darius Slay, DeAndre Levy, the linebacker, and, of course, Ziggy Ansah at the end, all have had their injuries this year. Ziggy's was long-term early. Levy's was long-term for most of the season. Yet the defense overachieved under Austin and played okay. And at one point went six, seven games of holding opponents under 20 points. They give up a lot of yards. And that's what I think is my concern if I'm a Lions fan. And I am. I'm hoping that they win this weekend. I think it would be great. But my concern is that Russell Wilson, can scramble, make plays. Lions aren't great with their linebackers. I'm not scared of Thomas Rawls or anything like that. But I just feel like Lions give up way too many yards, way too much passing efficiency to the opposition. And, and Wilson will have one of those days where he'll make enough plays to win the football game. What do you see there offensively for Seattle?
First of all, the Lions' defense, I think they get overrated because of the style they play on both sides of the ball. The Lions' offense was first in the league in most plays per drive this year, and the Lions' defense was third highest in most plays per drive. So essentially, on both sides of the ball, they just want that clock to run. All they're looking to do is just get that clock down. So the number of possessions the Lions have faced is a lot less than most teams. And I think that's kind of inflated some of their raw defensive yards and points numbers. But as far as Seattle goes, since Russell Wilson was drafted in 2012, they never ranked any lower than third in rushes per game.
Right.
This year they were 20th. Without Marshawn Lynch and with Thomas Rawls injured most of the year, injuries throughout the running back core. Thomas Rawls missed time, CJ Precise missed time, Alex Collins missed time. It's been a revolving door at running back. In fact, their leading rusher this year, and it really wasn't close, was Christian Michael, who, of course, is now in Green Bay.
That's right, not even on the team.
And I'm kind of hoping, just for the novelty of it, that somehow the Seahawks and Packers meet each other in the playoffs, just so Seattle has a chance to play its own leading rusher.
What about the receiving core? And it sounds like Jimmy Graham's finally settled in there. I know he got booed at times last year. How's he doing?
Jimmy Graham's been fantastic this year, tremendous. It's one of those things where they gave up a center, a Pro Bowl center in Unger to get him, and the last year it was not quite the disaster it was made out to be. He was still the leading receiver when he got hurt, but it clearly wasn't what they had hoped to get in return for that trade. This year, I can't imagine what the Seahawks would be without him. The Seahawks passing game is pretty much a two-man show. It's Doug Baldwin and Jimmy Graham. And if you can take those guys away, or if you can put Russell Wilson in the turf, it's actually the best way to stop Seattle. But if you take away those two guys, there's not a lot of proven options, especially with Tyler Lockett breaking his leg a few weeks ago. The Seahawks have numbers, but they don't really have a second or third, a proven second or third receiver. You're looking at youngsters like Paul Richardson, who's had his own litany of injuries, or Tanner McAvoy, whose great accomplishments so far were completing a pass with a fake punt and catching a Hail Mary in the preseason. So it's a two-man show for Seattle. They've really, of late, been forcing the ball to Doug Baldwin on a lot of screen passes, and counting on Jimmy Graham for more of the downfield threat. But those two guys, so far, more often than not, have been enough to get the job done.
Now, it's interesting.
This is a team that can't run consistently. They can run sometimes, but not consistently, especially not like they used to.
Right.
They can't protect the quarterback very well, and it's a two-man show in the passing game.
You know, it's interesting with Jimmy Graham coming back on and you know, playing better, because at the beginning of the season, and it's gotten a little bit better as the year's gone on, and as Levy has gotten healthier, although you wouldn't even know he was on the field last week. The Lions had a real issue, Vance, at the start of the year, in covering tight ends. It didn't matter who they played. You go to Jack Doyle in week one, you know, all the way down to you know, Delanie Walker week two. I mean, I could name everybody. The Lions just have real problems with the tight end. Now, it got, like I said, it's gotten better lately. On third downs, they bring in a young safety, a rookie in Miles Killebrew, who's done a nice job against tight ends. Like I said, Levy being back helps. But if Jimmy Graham is going to be a big factor on Saturday night, that could be a definite win for Seattle, because the Lions have had their share. I mean, the C.J. Fedorowicz, for goodness sakes, week 8, week 9 in Houston lit up the Lions. So that's been an issue for them, is covering the tight ends. The Lions are not very good, I think, at linebacker, and especially against the tight end. And that's why, and you brought it up, Stafford and those guys have got to be on the field, you know, for a while. Man, they were not on the field at all in the second half Sunday night against Green Bay. And that's one of the reasons they only scored really 17 points, if you want to count that late Hail Mary. But I thought that, you know, their time of possession really hurt them in the second half. The Lions defense was absolutely exhausted. But that's Aaron Rodgers doing his thing, you know.
Yeah, no, he definitely turned back into Aaron Rodgers late in the year. It seems like we've talked a lot about Seattle and not as much about Detroit as of late. I talked about kind of the weaknesses in the Seattle defense. Richard Sherman still very very good, but the other corners aren't quite as sharp. And, of course, without Earl Thomas, the deep pass is way more likely against Seattle. How do you feel about Detroit's chances attacking a unit like that?
You know what? I'm okay with the Lions' passing game as long as they know where to go for four quarters. I think the last couple of weeks, the offense has looked very, very good in the first half. They go down to Dallas and drop a 21-burger on the Cowboys with Zach Zenner running the ball, with Stafford crisp. I know his finger's been an issue, but I don't think that's as big an issue as people are making it out to be, and he doesn't want to make it an issue either. He's fit some balls into some tight spots throughout the last couple of weeks, even with the finger injury. But then you get to the second half, and teams are making adjustments. They're taking Zenner away. The Lions are not feeding Zenner as much, and I think it's been more schematically an issue in the second half. But if Stafford can get some time, look, he was good last year up in Seattle on that Monday night game, which they probably should have won if Calvin Johnson doesn't fumble that ball at the 2-yard line. So I think the Lions will score some points. My biggest couple of concerns: number one, is Travis Swanson healthy enough at center to come back from a concussion? He hasn't played in a few weeks, but he's been limited to practice the last couple of days. Hopefully he's back. They're at their best when it's Reef at right tackle, Larry Warford at right guard, Swanson at center, Graham Glasgow, the rookie from Michigan, at left guard, and Taylor Decker, the rookie from Ohio State, at left tackle. Last couple of weeks, they've had to shuffle the offensive line around. Glasgow started, I think, the last three or four games with a concussion to Swanson. Lakin Tomlinson's played some left guard. He's, to me, a bigger step down from Graham Glasgow. And it's funny, Tomlinson was a first-round pick under Martin Mayhew. Glasgow was a third-rounder this past year under Bob Quinn. But right tackle's an issue. Riley Reiff's got a sore hip, didn't play last week, been limited the last few days. I think the Lions are hopeful that he can play. But if Riley Reiff doesn't play at right tackle, you're talking about Cornelius Lucas, their third-string right tackle, having to go, because last week Corey Robinson played the whole game, but then got hurt toward the end. he's now out for the year. So it'd be Cornelius Lucas having to play right tackle. And, you know, you got guys like Cliff Avril coming off the edge and Michael Bennett and even Frank Kalahari Clark. That's an inside joke. When he got arrested at a water park years ago, right near Kalahari. Yeah. But regardless.
I forgot he was from Michigan.
That's right. But, you know, don't ask him about Sandusky, Ohio anytime soon. But that's a big concern for me is that right tackle spot for the Lions. But, no, I think Stafford will get his opportunities and the Lions will score some points. But I just don't know if Detroit's got the ammunition defensively to slow down Seattle and Russell Wilson. And if Wilson's in the run game, you know, I don't know. I get a feeling that could be a sore subject for the Lions defensively once midnight Eastern Saturday night hits about not being able to contain Russell Wilson.
That's entirely possible, and I pretty much agree that the if I'm a Detroit fan, I'm way more worried about the defense stopping Seattle's offense than Matt Stafford and company scoring points. I know they've got a lot of weapons to throw to too. I know Eric Ebron has in his third year, it looks like he's taking a big step forward. And of course, Golden Tate, we're all very familiar with here as a number one receiver. Frankly, we miss him. He could have been a big help over these past few years, including a certain game against New England in Arizona, but we'll talk about that later. Between those two and Anquan Boldin and Marvin Jones, it seems like that's a pretty deep and diverse receiving core that can attack a team pretty much all over the field.
They can. I think the biggest thing, Vince, is no Theo Riddick helps the Seahawks. Placed on injured reserve, had a sore wrist. Lions have never said if it's broken or if he's had any kind of surgery. But Riddick's been the guy that has been their leading rusher, has been their best receiver out of the backfield, a guy that on third downs they can split wide, that lines up like a receiver, almost like Ty Montgomery with Green Bay, and gets the job done. So no Theo Riddick's been hurting this Lions offense, not having him as that safety valve for Stafford. Bolden's sort of been like a pseudo tight end at times in the slot. You said big improvement from Ebron. I definitely think he's been better, but it's hard to be as bad as he was as a rookie and had some injuries. I don't know if Stafford trusts him in a big spot. Ebron seems to be a guy that catches five or six balls, and he'll have 60, 70 yards, but one touchdown in his third year. And remember, you know, Lions passed up Zach Martin and Aaron Donald and OBJ and HaHa Clinton Dix and all those guys to draft Ebron 10th. And he's not lived up to the number 10 billing, but how are the Seahawks in guarding tight ends? Will Ebron have some space on Saturday night?
That's been a bugaboo for them for a long time. They'll give up two or three really easy first down completions to tight ends almost every game. And that's on top of this, you know, a great tight end for throwing a big player too. And part of that is scheme-wise, because both of these defenses, actually, now I think about it, they're both pretty conservative schemes that will give up short completions. In Seattle's case, that is mostly, especially early in the game, they want guys to catch short passes over the middle, because that means Cam Chancellor has a chance to hit them. And they want to knock guys out with Cam Chancellor bringing the heat. So he'll get his catches, I'm pretty sure. It's whether he can get the big catches and the catches at the right time is the question. I do think that you're right about Riddick. His loss is a big loss for Detroit. And Seattle, while their pass defense has really struggled lately, their run defense has been pretty much fantastic all year round. So I don't think as a Seahawks fan, I'm not worried about what Zach Zinner and the Detroit running game can do. And if I'm the Lions, I'm probably coming out throwing, and Matt Stafford's going to throw at least 40 passes in this game, probably a lot more.
How many times will Matt Stafford get hit Saturday night in your mind? Seattle third. I know you guys are Seahawks are third in the league with 42 sacks. You know, Lions near the bottom and have not had a good year getting to the passer at all. 26 sacks, tied for second last. How good has Michael Bennett and that pass rush been?
On the whole, very good. I think, again, we've kind of been spoiled lately, but actually, now I think about it, they've had a rebound from last year. Bennett and Avril are tremendous, and then they have two good, the second line of pass rushers, basically, is Cassius Marsh and Frank Clark. Clark hit 10 sacks this year, I believe, for the first time. So they've got a good quartet of pass rushers there, And no doubt, that's a scary thought about what they could do over four quarters of passing the heavy offense to Stafford. But Stafford doesn't seem to me like a guy, even behind a substandard line, he seems like a guy who's going to be good at getting the ball out and not taking more hits than he has to. As opposed to Russell Wilson,
right,
pulling up that ball forever. You know, they put himself in great danger sometimes.
It's interesting. I think at the start of the year, you would say Seattle had a better offensive line because the Lions' line was going to be young. I happen to think the Lions' offensive line's been underrated this year and better than I expected with Decker and I mentioned Glasgow. Larry Warford at right guard, I thought he was pummeling some people Sunday night against the Packers. Lions' O-line, right tackle's a concern if Reeve doesn't play, but I think all in all, they've held up pretty well, that offensive line. What about the kick? Go ahead.
Just real quick, I was writing about them before the season in Football Outsiders Almanac, our annual book previewing the NFL, and I was writing about the Lions. And I was kind of surprised when I looked at their offensive line. I was like, there are first-round draft picks all over the place.
Yeah, yeah.
There's potential here. And I won't lie, I didn't watch them really closely. I don't know how they developed, but I was kind of optimistic about what they could do this year.
No, you were one of the only ones then, because I think many people thought that's going to be the Achilles heel of this team, and it turned out that the O-line was probably better than people thought, and a lot of folks said Stafford's not going to last the season, and yet he did. Vince Verhey, Locked On Seahawks, Matt Derry, Locked On Lions, a little crossover podcast. What about the kicking game, Vince? Everybody knows John Ryan from the fake punt from a couple of weeks ago, and he got drilled. which made Pete Carroll, I thought, look a little ridiculous even doing that at that point in the game. But how's the kicking game up there?
It was really strange. It's funny. He's most famous. He's probably most famous for three plays in his life, and none of them are actually punts. He had, of course, the touchdown pass and a fake field goal against Green Bay in the playoffs in 2014. And I don't know if any of you have ever seen it, but the facial expression at the exact point he threw the pass is the silliest thing you've ever seen in your life. And then he had a play in Minnesota in the ice game just last year, when there, I think it was a bad snap and he had to scramble and he got drilled again. But, he has had kind of a down year, and the Seahawks special teams have not been anything great. They've been good at kicking for points, but nothing special. Actually had a lot of missed extra points. The punt game is not as good as it has been in past years, and their return game was good, but again, Tyler Lockett broke his leg. Last week they had Richard Sherman returning punts because they needed somebody. And just this week they signed Devin Hester off the street. At least he's a veteran returner.
Oh, man.
And, you know, I'll be the guy. When Devin Hester's time is up, I will be the guy waving the banner that he deserves to be in the Hall of Fame. But he does not deserve to be in the Hall of Fame for what he's doing in 2017 now. You know, that return against the Colts in the Super Bowl was a decade ago.
I know. I wonder if the Lions are going to... Look, if he had a number 23 and he was wearing the C with the black helmet in Chicago, and you're right, it was 2009, I'd be worried. I saw that. I'm assuming they're saying he's going to play, right?
Oh, he's going to play. He's going to be the kickster. I mean, that's what he's there for. Return kickoffs, which will probably be mostly taking a knee, and return punts, which I'd imagine be a lot of fair catching. they just kind of... After Lockett broke his leg, they skated by, kind of making it up as they went along, and then finally got to the playoffs. They said, look, I'm sure, you know, this guy's lost, he hasn't lost a step, he's lost five steps, but he knows what he's doing. And so they, what the hell, signed up for this game. And, it's probably an improvement just in that, A, you're not putting your number one cornerback at risk for turning kicks, and B, at least he'll be, experienced enough and wise enough to know when to call fair catch, when to feel the ball, when to let it go into the end zone, et cetera, et cetera. I'm not looking for any big plays. I'm just looking for confidence in avoiding getting pinned deep.
Mm. Well, I that's great stuff there. The Lions, the special teams this year have been fantastic. Sam Martin's one of the best punters in the league, and I argued he should have been the NFC representative for punter. I know Johnny Hecker had a good year with the Rams, but a lot of that's on rolls. I think Sam Martin's been booming the ball. I know the ball flies up there in Seattle. Matt Prater's been pretty good, although that missed field goal Sunday night certainly hurt against the Packers. And the one thing the Lions have done pretty well this year is tackled on special teams, whether it's in the return game or not. Andre Roberts has been a little bit banged up with a shoulder in the return game. I think he'll play. But I think the Lions, as far as the kicking game goes, if it comes down to that, kicking game's been pretty good. So that's one spot I think the Lions feel pretty good about going into Seattle Saturday night.
No, I agree with that. I know they've had a couple of kick return touchdowns this year. And if the returner can't go, I know the backup is Dwayne Washington, who is, of course, familiar to Seattle fans because he played at the University of Washington just last year.
Correct. And although they also have Jace Billingsley, who they signed off the practice squad a couple of weeks ago, just in case of with Roberts. But it sounds like I think Andre Roberts will be out there.
All right, there you go. Should we go with final predictions?
Absolutely. You, Vince, you're the man on this one. You go first.
All right. Like I say, I like the matchup somewhat of Detroit's offense against Seattle's defense. I don't like the matchup of Detroit's defense against Seattle's offense. So I will say the Seahawks pull this out. I will say 24-17.
So 7-point game. Do most people up there? Would you, be safe in saying that everybody's picking the Seahawks? I mean, is anybody saying they're in trouble?
Well, quite frankly, you know what? No one in this game specifically. There's a lot of people who have already turned their eyes to the offseason and figure even if they get past Detroit this week, they won't get past Atlanta next week.
Mm.
So there's a lot of people who are kind of already in offseason mode. But that's more about what will happen in the coming weeks and this weekend. I think everyone here is pretty comfortable that Seattle's going to come out ahead.
But nobody thinks they'll win two games.
I can't say nobody, but a lot. Mm. A lot of them don't like their chances to get it go on a deep run.
I'm going to pick the Seahawks as well. I do think the Lions hang around, and that's what they kind of do. The Lions hang around and win, or they hang around and lose. The Dallas game a couple of weeks ago, it was kind of an anomaly in the second half. It got away from them. But the Lions have not won a single road game outdoors this year at 0-3. They struggled on the road recently, including obviously with the Giants and the Cowboys, who are both very good teams. And the Lions haven't beaten a playoff team this year. Everybody that argues about the schedule, look, to me, I think the Lions are a good football team, but they're not great. And they're not world beaters, and they do need more talent. But to say, well, who'd they play? Well, they swept Minnesota. They won at Minnesota. They beat the Redskins at home, who were, almost a playoff team. So there's some decent wins there. But, man, it's just so hard to win up there with the 12s and you guys raising that flag and everything else. I just think that that's going to be too difficult and too tough a task. And I don't think the Lions are playing all that well right now either on this three-game slide going into there. So I'm with you. I like 24-17, something around there where – Seattle likely will advance.
All right, well, that's going to do it. Thank you very much for setting all this up, Matt. I appreciate it.
No problem. There he is, Vince Verhey of Locked On Seahawks, Matt Derry, Locked On Lions. This has been a crossover Lions-Seahawks podcast. Vince, a lot of fun, man.
All right, thanks, Matt. I appreciate it.
All right, there you go. I want to thank Matt Derry of Locked On Lions once again for setting all of that up. That is going to do it for today. I want to thank you all for listening. Please be sure to follow the show on Twitter, @LockedSeahawks. You can also like us on Facebook at facebook.com/LockedOnSeahawks. And be sure to drop us a line at LockedOnSeahawks@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. That is going to do it for today. Thank you for listening, and go Hawks.
Is democracy in danger or decline? Condoleezza Rice, William Galston, and Carlos Gutierrez and others take on this question in the fall edition of The Catalyst, a journal of ideas from the Bush Institute. Surveys show Americans place less trust in institutions like the media and business. Others contend America has faced far more challenging periods and emerged strong. Leading policymakers, Bush Institute experts, and respected journalists take on this debate. Read about it at bushcenter.org/catalyst.